the Sunday school class at Calvary Church was teaching the story of the prodigal son to the children. And the teacher wanted to emphasize the resentful attitude of the older brother. So after describing how happy the household was over the return of the wayward son, the teacher pointed out that one member of the family did not share their joy. Can anyone tell me who this was? Well, a 9-year-old girl who had been listening sympathetically to the story, she waved her hand and says, I know. It was the fatted calf. You know, in the seminary, they always teach homiletics, which is, of course, giving sermons. And one professor was saying about the importance of alliteration in preaching. And so one seminarian decided to take this professor literally, and he rewrote the story of the prodigal son with alliteration using the letter F. So let me share this with you. It's very short, but it's very clever. Here is the story of the prodigal son. Feeling footloose and fancy free, a feather-brained fellow forced his fond father to fork over the farthings and flew far to foreign fields and fabulously frittered his fortune with faithless friends. Fleeced by his fellows in folly and facing famine, he found himself in a filthy farmyard. Fairly famishing, he would have filled his frame with forage food from the fodder's fragments. He said to himself, "Phooey! My father's flunkies fare far finer." In fact, you should have seen at the last Mass, the lady trying to do sign language for this. She gave me a very unhappy look. So she looked over. She couldn't believe this. Okay. So, "Phooey, my father's flunkies fare far finer." The frazzled fugitive forlornly fumbled, frankly facing the facts. Frustrated by failure and filled with foreboding, he fled forthwith to his family. Falling at his father's feet, he forlornly fumbled, "Father, I failed," and fruitlessly forfeited family fellowship and favor. The far-sighted father, forestalling future flinching, frantically flagged the farmers, "Fetch a fatling from the flock and fix a feast." The fugitive's fault-finding brother frowned, but the faithful father figured, "Filial fidelity is fine, but the fugitive is found. What forbids fervent festivity? Let flags be unfurled, let fanfares flare." The father's forgiveness formed the foundation for the former fugitive's future fortitude. Pretty clever, isn't it? Today we have this great episode of the prodigal son, one of the greatest parables in the history of the world. It's been called the story of the prodigal son, the story of the resentful brother, but perhaps the greatest title is the story of the merciful father. And we see when we look at this passage that Jesus was speaking only to the scribes and Pharisees who were complaining and very unhappy that all of these tax collectors and sinners and prostitutes and others were coming to Christ and repenting of their sins and finding salvation. So they were very upset and resentful. So the Lord painted this amazing story, this incredible picture of this merciful father who had two sons. The younger son decided not to wait for his inheritance. He told his dad, "Give me my share of the estate that will be coming to me eventually." And that, of course, was very offensive and very rude of him, wasn't it, to say, "I don't want to wait till you die to get the money. Give it to me now." Bishop Sheen says that all sin is when we say, "Give me." It always has this root of selfishness. So he says, "Give me the money now." So the father divided up his property and gave half of it to the son. And all that money the son took with him to a far-off land, where it says he wasted it in dissipation. So he spent all his money, but then the economy went bad, and there was a severe famine broke out in that country. And he was now penniless, he was hungry, he had to work at something which would be considered the lowest of the low. As you know, the Jews would not eat pork, and yet he had to actually take care of the swine. So it doesn't get any worse than that. Hungry, poor, destitute, doing a job which would be considered the worst kind of job in those days. And so he hit rock bottom. He was experiencing suffering, but that was his wake-up call. That's what God used to bring about his conversion. And so he realized his emptiness, his slavery to sin, and he decides, by the grace of God, to get up and to return to his father. So it says he came to his senses. He did his examination of conscience. He decided to go back and make his confession, to confess to his father he had sinned against heaven and against him. And he was willing to do his penance. He realized he wasn't deserving to be called a son anymore. He'd already spent his inheritance. But he said, well, if I go back home, at least maybe my dad will hire me on as a servant, and I can just take care of the land, and because they have plenty to eat, it's better than here hungry, taking care of swine. So he comes to his senses, he gets up, he walks back, and what a beautiful passage here, it says, his father caught sight of him while he was a long way off. That indicates something about the father, that he was always praying for his son to return. He was always waiting and looking and searching on the horizon to see when his son would return. So he says the father ran out to him, and which was, of course, a great act of love, and embraced him and kissed him. His son makes his confession. Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I don't deserve to be called your son. Just take me on as a servant. The father immediately forgives him. In fact, he says to the servants, bring out a robe and put it on him. The robe would restore his dignity. The robe, of course, represents sanctifying grace that we get when we go to confession. When we go to confession, we're dead in sin, just like this prodigal son. And yet, we're then forgiven, and the robe of sanctifying grace is restored to us. He says, put a ring on his finger. So now he's a son again. He doesn't have to be a servant. He can be a son. He's part of the family again. Put sandals on his feet. He doesn't have to be a slave. He can be part of the family. And then he even says, kill the fatted calf for the slaughter. We're going to have a feast. And what's so interesting is that people would keep an animal for a special occasion, just like in the old days, people would, if they raised their own turkeys, they would pick a special turkey and fatten it up all year for Thanksgiving. The Thanksgiving turkey. Well, that's what this fatted calf was. Something saved for a special occasion. And so they decided to have a feast. And the father says, this son of mine was dead. That's what sin is. Mortal sin kills the life of grace in the soul. We become slaves to sin. But now, he says, he's come to life again. It's a beautiful thing about people going to confession. They walk in dead, they come out alive. They walk in with mortal sin, they come out clothed in the robe of holiness and sanctifying grace, where their soul is transformed by the grace of God. This son of mine was lost, but now he's been found. So the festivities begin, a great feast, and then the older brother who's out working on the land, he hears all the music and dancing and the noise, and he comes back and says, what's going on? And he says, your brother has returned. Your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. So now the older brother is angry. He's resentful, and he refuses to go in the house. So again, the merciful father who went out running after his younger son now goes out to the older son pleading, come back, join us for the feast. And the older son is so resentful. He says, he took all your money, he spent it on dissolute living. And the father says, we must rejoice. He was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and he is found. Let us rejoice. And he says to his older son, you know, everything I have is yours. You're going to get all this anyway. This is your inheritance. This is all for you. Yes, you've worked hard in the field. You've always obeyed me. But let's rejoice because your brother was dead, but he's now come back to life. So don't be resentful. Don't be angry that he has come back. So what can we take from this gospel? Well, first, I think we should take the fact that sometimes it's only when people hit rock bottom that they turn their life around. Working with prisoners over the years, I see this. When they hit rock bottom, they're in prison. They come to their senses. They turn their life around. So don't wait for tragedy. Don't wait for financial disaster for you to convert and to turn your life around. Don't wait to go to confession. Go right away. And realize that when you go to confession, you'll be received by a merciful Father, by the Lord Himself, who will forgive your sins, help you break free from your slavery to sin. He'll restore your dignity by having you receive sanctifying grace again. And then there'll be the feast, which is the Eucharist. That's why people in mortal sin should not go to communion. They have to go to confession first. They have to get up and go to their Father and have their sins forgiven. And then they have the feast, which is the Holy Eucharist. I'll just end with this little passage that was in the Arlington Herald this week in the commentary on the prodigal son. I think it's quite excellent. It has some questions. Because whenever we listen to a parable, we should put ourselves in the place of one of the figures in the parable. So which brother do we resemble? We should ask ourselves, am I the young and immature brother with my use of my father's gifts? Am I in a pleasure-seeking mode? Do I think that the world revolves around me? Am I convinced that life is all about good times? Am I aware of the needs of those around me? Am I forgetful of where my gifts come from and that I have been given them to use for the service of others? Or am I like the older brother? Do I look down on others with disdain? Am I frustrated because I try so hard and others don't? Am I proud of my progress in the spiritual life? Do I constantly compare myself with others? Do I have a difficult time when others receive the attention of friends, family members, or colleagues at work? So those are questions we can ask ourselves. So Jesus uses this parable to paint a picture of our Heavenly Father, whose mercy is deeper than the oceans and endures forever. With a Father like that, how can we ever be afraid to come home? How can we not be moved to look over our lives, see where we have gone astray, and come back to Him with humble and contrite hearts?